You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
It is our Shapeshifter segment, and today I've got a duo that is a husband and wife. It is Thabang and Zama Manonyane, and I believe they're already joining us on the line. Remember that if you do want to join us, +27734703520 is the number that you can use to talk to us if you do have a question for them. And maybe you want to call us directly, +27120017679. We are also available on YouTube as well. You can send us your comments from there, and I believe they're already on the line. Thabang and Zama, good evening.
Good evening.
How are you today?
We are good, and how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for asking. Is ma'am on the line as well?
Yes, I'm here. Good evening,
to you. Good evening, ma'am. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
I'm also good. Thank you so much. How was your day?
My day was good. Our day was good. I was at work, and it's a normal, young professional's life at work. I don't have much to complain, other than to be grateful for each day.
Fantastic, fantastic. And you, ma'am, how was your day?
I think my day went well, and the highlight was a 10-kilometer run, which I did in the afternoon.
Is it?
Wonderful day, yeah.
Oh, that's really amazing. How is 10 kilometers? I mean, I know a lot of us, myself included, 10 kilometers is like, yo, where do I even start?
I think it's about the pace. You must keep and just keep to it.
It's about the pace, eh?
If you pace yourself well, don't rush to finish.
Yeah.
Don't think too much about it.
Yeah.
Just pace yourself.
Just pace yourself.
You enjoy the experience, yeah.
Fantastic.
I have a lot to learn.
You and I, eh? You just gave me comfort there, Thabang. I must be honest that I thought I was the worst. And you also saying you've got a lot to learn. It's a song came was on this thing.
No, we are together on this one.
Now you gave me comfort. Well, thank you so much, sir and ma'am, for joining us this evening. We really appreciate your time. We've got this segment called Shapeshifter. And what we're trying to do is bring leading people in different fields, as in business, academia, they could be in religion, they could be in whatever space. And we just want to understand the person behind the person. But sometimes, you know, as young people out there, they might be looking at you and admiring you from afar, but they don't know what it took to be where you are. And I suppose through this segment, this is where we kind of delve into that and say, how has the journey been? Who is the person behind the person? Because sometimes we see you with the, you know, that coveted SA thing at the end of our names, you know, that we all want that thing there that sits as SA. But what does it take to get there, right? So this is exactly that segment, and we really appreciate your time. Maybe let's start there. As they say, and as a respecter, it's Women's Month. We're not done. We'll start with Umem. Okay, ma'am, how can you describe yourself? If people ask you to Uzama Ubani, how do you describe yourself?
I would say I'm an ordinary young black woman.
Okay.
Who's very focused.
Okay.
That's one thing that makes me stand out. I'm a very focused young person.
Yeah.
But I'm also very fun. I love outdoor activities.
Yeah.
I wear a lot of hats in my youth. And a young wife now. I'm a career woman. I'm a sister.
Okay.
I'm a friend. But for me, I'm a daughter.
Yeah.
One of my favorite pets is that of being an aunt. I love my nephews and nieces. So, that is what would define me.
Yes, yes. And wearing these different hats, I mean, we speak to a lot of ladies who would say that, you know, we wear different hats, maybe more than the men do. And it comes with a little bit of pressure to do that. Is that the same with you?
Sometimes, yes. Sometimes, because society puts us on pedestals, you know. So the certain expectations are what triple a lot of us as young people.
Yeah.
You see on social media, you hear parents at church or in the community say, no, as a wife, this is what you're supposed to do, or blah, blah, blah. So I think that is what puts most of the pressure. But, you know, when you learn to live your life being led by God and just knowing, being focused, it helps, because then you know, which, you know what, I have a goal that I need to meet. And being balanced is very important. So if you're going to be more of a wife and less of a friend, you're not living a balanced life. There's a way of, you just need to, and it's not, I don't think I've mastered it yet, but it's something that you learn in the journey as you grow up, and also as you interact with people of different age groups. That's essential.
Yeah, yeah. It must be difficult to do that. And like you're saying, you know, one has to learn to balance. And for you, Thabang, how do you describe yourself? When people say, tell us who you are. And for you, I don't know if you wear different hats as well. And how's that, you know, juggling all of those?
I wouldn't say I wear many hats.
Okay.
I think I'm more of a reserved young professional.
Okay.
On my side, living a more balanced life for me would include not only a person who's just focused on their career development, but I'm someone who's also passionate about also growing in stature or in good health. That is like my wife also being into outdoor or social activity as much as I am in my career or professional, but also not leaving behind the spiritual aspect as well. So for me to be growing holistically, or when I am happy is in my week, when I know that I can safely say that I am growing in my career development and I am growing physically in my physical health, and I am also growing spiritually, as in drawing closer to my maker feeding my spiritual man.
I mean, just as a bit of a throwing in there, saying you're a reserved person, a chartered accountant's reserved, it's more like engineers, and I've been exposed to engineers. They talk to machines. Outside of machines, they just don't like talking. Is that the same with accountants as well? You all and your numbers, that's it. And the world can end after that.
Yeah, I would say that, but my wife wouldn't agree.
Wouldn't agree with that. Okay.
But I believe that we are more reserved.
Yeah.
Just give me a laptop, and that's where you know, I'll spend most of my day, not most of the week, on. And if I go out, will be just for that short time.
Yeah.
And then when I come back home, I wish I could just go back in that study room, just open my laptop a bit, just to lunch. And, you know.
Exactly what I was saying.
No, I agree with him with the laptop. Definitely is part of our family.
So when he sits with that laptop, he can sit until the morning and he's fine with it.
Yeah, and sometimes you wonder, like, don't you get tired? Like, and the thing is also, it's because our career is so different.
Yes.
When I book off at 4 o'clock, that's it.
Yeah.
I come home, I'm home. It's home time.
Focus on home.
At 8 can be work, you know, in the evening.
I know. I was speaking to a gentleman yesterday from the PE in Kabeja, and he's also an accountant. He said one of the things that made him leave accounting is that, you just sit there and you worry about rents and cents, and it's almost like the world doesn't exist until you find that 1 cent that's causing that balance sheet not to balance, you know, and they're looking for that 1 cent. You're like, hey, Mutu, I'm talking to you. Like, you know, like, yeah, I hear you, but I'm looking for a cent. I need to report on this tomorrow. So I suppose, engineers, them and their machines, accountants and their laptops and all that. So Mr. Thabang, where did you grow up, and what are some of the challenges that, you know, you faced growing up in wherever you grew up?
Okay, I grew up in Northwest, in a town, Mafikeng.
Maftown.
Yes, in Mufftown.
Yeah.
I grew up in Mufftown in a village or one of the villages there.
Yeah.
Mahope.
Yeah.
And growing up in a village has some challenges, but not only those that are inherent because you are in a village setup, but also challenges that are more that are related to your home or your home. So for me, the challenges that I had when I was growing up was growing up as an orphan.
Where
I was being raised by my relatives, and I learned how to fend for myself at a young age. That is, after school, I would use that time effectively. I was always rather busy. Didn't have a lot of time to, you know, chill with my gents or go out to check out the ladies, you know, those kind of things.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think we had challenges where, if I would describe it in a sense that I normally use, is that we were living below the poverty line, and that comes with a lot of challenges. One person growing up, and also it makes your future look a bit bleak, if I could say.
Yeah.
Or you see very far.
Yeah.
If you're in such a background. So yeah, that's the type of background that I was growing up in until I got a light. Someone came and touched a light.
Tell us about that. I mean, growing up as an orphan and just in also a poor background can, you know, lead any young person to give up. Why didn't you give up?
Yes, I think, as I say, for me, someone had to come and actually touch a light. I was then, when I was in high school, you know, busy trying to focus on my schoolwork and also trying to make ends meet as well. So that someone introduced me to a church.
Okay.
And, I think that is where my life started to take shape, when I started being part of a church community. For me, really, what groomed me was the community where I was growing up, the parents there who were helping me with those odd school.
Yeah.
And that really put the nail was when I was then introduced to a church community when I was in my matric. And then soon after matric, I was now done with my matric. I had a bachelor's, but I didn't know what next.
Yes.
Because at the time, you know, we didn't have a lot of people that we would look up to or that would come and say, Chana, when you are done with this, I want you to consider this career. I want you to consider this college.
Yeah.
So for me, then I was done and I was at home and, you know, no definite aim or purpose or thinking about what next until someone from the church community actually asked me to say, what are you doing this year? Because I know you passed him. Nothing much. And they said, there's no way you're going to sit at home and do nothing. I want you to enroll for anything and I will assist you with the financial aspect of that.
Yes.
And that is when I developed actually a desire to study a degree.
Yeah.
And enrolled. That's when I went into accounting and I started. I studied a chartered accountancy degree just with that as a start. I didn't even know what is this degree. I was just going in because I also wanted to, you know, not disappoint and also take hold of the opportunity that is being presented to me to study further.
Yeah.
And even going into that, it was not easy because, you know, when I was studying, no one said you need so many PIS scores to enroll into this particular course. So I found that I actually didn't even qualify for the chartered accountancy course.
Yeah.
And that because I did maths literacy instead of pure maths.
Yeah.
And now I had to first go and upgrade my maths literacy to a distinction so that I can be enrolled into an extended course by a year.
Sure, sure.
of financial accounting.
Sure.
And only then when I got into the financial accountancy stream, that's when then they said, actually, you are doing well. You yeah. can switch to chartered accountancy. And I switched into chartered accountancy. Basically, I always say, you know, I don't know if this is the right thing to say, but it found me.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I want us to unpack that journey a little bit of when you were studying and maybe even your first job and what your career now looks like. But I want to bring in Mem here. Mem, where did you grow up and what were some of your challenges that you faced? You alluded to being different even in careers. I'm sure you come from different places as well.
Yes, no. I was born in KZN.
Ah, look at that. Northwestern KZN. what a disparity.
Then my family relocated to Gauteng officially yes. in 2002.
Okay.
That's where I grew up, in the East Rand.
In the East Rand. Yes. Whereabouts in the East Rand?
Ish. I think I've moved around a lot around there.
I see.
Where I am right now, ne? Yeah. It's a place called Villa Lisa.
Okay. Okay.
That's where I call home now. Mm. That's where I grew up, raised by a single parent.
Yeah.
A very, very young looking old woman.
Okay.
I'm a silly. That's our mom.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where I'm from. I went to school, did my primary in the same area, not in the same area, but same in the East Rand, as well as high school. Then I studied in Karankuwa in Pretoria.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that's basically where I grew up.
Okay. And what challenge did you face growing up?
I think the greatest challenge was being raised by a single parent. And not the fact that it was one parent. But the fact that they were one parent, you only had one role model to refer to.
Eish.
The privilege of having both parents is that at least there's a balance of powers, you know, and also there's a relief in terms of responsibility. So when you are raised by one parent, if a sibling needs, if all of you need something at once, the mom has to choose who needs the agent, you know. And also growing up in a setup where going to university was not a big deal. It was not even part of the discussion. That was also a challenge on its own. Like my husband has already alluded, there was no one to look up to. So there was also little money to even think of university. I remember I had to learn when I was in, I think, grade 11, that you actually need money to apply to university.
Yes.
Like, how can you need money? I thought it was free.
Yes.
Yeah, those are some of the challenges that came with growing up.
Yeah.
And also just the peer pressure amongst your peers, you know. A lot of people were just going into high school. When they reached grade 10 to 12, people start falling pregnant, people start leaving school. Those things really affect you as a young person because you start thinking, where am I? Like, am I also going to end up like this? What's going to happen? Especially growing up in a township, which exposes you to a lot of more things than maybe growing up in more remote areas. I think those were most of the challenges that one faced when they were so young.
And how has that shaped you to be the person that you are today, whether corporately or even economically, spiritually, and all those sort of stuff? Would you say being raised by a single mom gave you a different perspective to life?
No, definitely it did. My mom, one thing I took from my mom is the spirit of resilience.
Yeah.
There was a point in our lives, in our family, we were doing very well, ne?
Yeah.
And then things started going down. But in the midst of all of that, my mom, I've never seen my mom broken down or depressed or taking us and giving us away to relatives because she can't handle us. We are five at home.
Yeah.
She's always taken the bull by its horn.
Yeah.
And that's the same spirit that I take. I've always told myself, you know what? I'm going to take ownership of my life. I'm not going to leave my life to chance to say, yes, there's no one that has gone to university in the family. I'm going to try, you know. And then when people see that you are trying, people then show interest in you.
Yeah.
I remember when I had to apply for university, my school teachers were the ones that sponsored my application.
Yeah.
When I then passed, when I passed my matric and had to register for university with no NSFAS, the Adventist Church members in the church where I attended gathered money and gave me money to register for university.
Nice.
So that for me, I've always told myself, you know what, like my mom, I'm going to be resilient. The spirit of resilience is something that I took from my upbringing. And it's the same attitude that I apply in every challenging situation that I find myself in, or in every pursuit, that in every goal that I pursue. I told myself, no, I'm going to push through this thing. It's fine, no matter how long you take, but get the goal.
Sure. Yeah. No matter how long it takes, get to the
it
goal.
It doesn't matter. Just push.
Yeah. Yeah. No matter how long it takes. Dental therapist, what is that? And how does one get into it?
So dental therapy is a degree that you study for. It's a 3-year degree. It's a career that is based on basic oral health care.
Okay.
By basic, I mean day-to-day. It's a career that is focused mostly on day-to-day oral health care problems.
Yeah.
Things like the toothaches and education and minor problems that people face on a daily basis. So the career is offered. I got the privilege of studying at the University of Bagomahati Health Science University, formerly known as UNSA.
Yeah.
It's a 3-year degree.
Yeah.
If you go to universities like UKZN and you get it with an honors.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's, I don't know if I'm answering your question.
No, you have. Yeah. Did you really want to get it from into this field from a young age? Is it something that you love?
I would say so.
Yeah.
At first, well, the most popular career that I was known was being a dentist.
Yes.
Ne?
Yes.
Then when I was then applying because of my grade 11 marks, I then applied for dental therapy because I wanted to ensure that at least I get into university.
Yeah. Yeah.
Got into dental therapy. And then I actually fell in love with it because I figured it's a career that offers me not exactly the same, but it also offers me a lot of opportunities in the field of oral health. And then as I learned more about the career, I then grew to love it because it gives me an opportunity to work in the government space and to also work as an independent person, which I believe is a win for a young person.
Ah, okay. And what has been the challenges so far? When did you start practicing and what has been the challenges?
So I qualified in 2016,
yeah.
or rather graduated in 2016.
Yeah.
And then I worked in private practice for 3 years or 2.5 years, so to say.
Yeah.
Now I'm currently working in the government.
Yeah.
I would say the challenges in private practice is getting employment generally. It's a bit difficult to find employment in private practice. In the government, the challenges are the lack of resources in the facilities. You almost feel as if you're overskilled in that profession because you have all these skills and you only get to practice one because there's not enough facilities. That's why then other people, like myself, we opt to open our own practices on the side just so that we can keep our skills alive. And because of the field that I'm in, I'm actually allowed to explore that option also.
Okay. No, that's really interesting. And then what motivates you? I mean, I suppose working in the public sector, like you said, has got its own challenges. And we see a lot of people who get despondent when they work in the public sector. What keeps you motivated every morning when you go into to a public institution?
I think we make, I believe that we do make a difference in people's lives. It might look insignificant to us as professionals because for me it's a day-to-day thing. But when you actually sit with a patient and you give a diagnosis and you give a treatment plan and you give an education on something that affects them, that light bulb moment that you have with them on that short session with them in the consultation room, it really changes people's lives. And the influence that you have in the community when you now start doing, because we also do community work where we go to schools, we go to old age homes, and we just educate people on how better to care for their health. We are very preventative orientated also in the career. That when you inform people and then you hear people coming back to you and saying, you know, since you taught me how to do this, I've learned to brush my teeth there. And you also see this when you do career health expos at churches.
Yes.
People come back and they inquire, they're like, wow, you know, since you taught me to do this, I've improved, or my kids have improved.
Yes.
That motivates one.
Yeah.
And I think also the biggest one is the relief relieving people from the pain that they are feeling.
Yes.
It's not a very nice experience.
Yes.
To some people have never experienced it. It's like, these people are being extra. But
yes.
If you've had a people, you spend a few things nice, and you go to a person who takes that pain away from you, the joy and the gratitude that people show after that experience, it's very humbling.
Yeah, but I'm not sure about taking out the tooth, though, if that's part of the nice things to go and see you guys. And people will tell you, the taking out of the teeth is one thing that we don't like. So we'll talk about that in just a moment. Mr. Manonyane, CA, Chartered Accountant, like you described, it sounds like it's something that found you, right? And as you learned and you improved yourself, they're like, no, man, you actually qualified to do this thing. Take us through that, your first job, and maybe where you are currently. How is it going? And what are some of the challenges that you face? I mean, for a lot of young people, accounting, maths and science and all, they are just a nightmare.
No, that's true. Accounting is not an easy stream to follow.
Yeah.
It is very difficult career level.
Yeah.
Just to qualify for honors, it was not easy.
Yeah.
And we have this very demanding honors degree.
They call
it a CPA, Certificate of Study in Accounting.
Yeah.
And that is where we are really tested. I didn't get it first time.
Yeah.
I actually failed my first attempt.
Sure.
And I had by then already received funding from the Auditor General.
Yeah.
A buzzer. So they were giving me funding to study.
Mm.
And after I did not make my first attempt, they offered me that you can come and work with us and continue doing your CTA part-time with UNISA or any other distant learning institution. But I felt that, you know, if I want to do this, I need to do it full-time.
Yes.
Because the way it was so demanding when I was doing it full-time, I can just imagine how it is doing it part-time.
Sure.
While you are working, and our work is also as demanding or even more.
Yes.
So I decided, no, I will go back and study, but studying the second time was without funding, but I went back and, you know, by God's means, I was assisted by the university because they really saw that I was really eager to go back and do this thing full time. And I really wanted a qualification for my full time institution. So I was assisted there by the lecturer, the dean. So, community, as I said, and they funded me, and I was able to get my certificate of foreign accountancy at second attempt. And the reason why I really wanted to get it is because I knew what was ahead of me. Once you have your honors, it's not over.
Okay.
You still have two board exams.
Sure.
The most difficult.
Sure.
And if you really don't have a solid technical foundation, technical meaning your university knowledge intact, then it becomes very difficult to actually pass those board exams. So after I got my second attempt and I passed, and then that's when I went on to do my training, some refer to it as articles. You have to do 3 years of articles.
Yeah.
I went and joined the Auditor General of South Africa.
Yeah.
And that's when I wrote my first board exam, and I passed it on my first sitting.
Sure.
And then you write your second board exam 18 months into your training. So that will be in your second year of training.
Yeah.
I wrote that second board exam, and I also passed it in my first
sitting. That's beautiful.
And, I actually finished slightly earlier, so I passed both my board exams. While I was still within training.
Yeah.
So then I had to just do the last year of my training before I could qualify. And my career is still fairly young because the journey I took was quite long to qualify.
Yeah.
It started in 2013. That's when I was actually upgrading my matric, and I only qualified now in 2013 in May.
Oh, beautiful.
2023.
Yeah.
In May.
Yeah.
Just finally got my membership with Biker, and I could use the designation Chairman Chartered Accountant or CASA.
Yes.
So it's not an easy journey, especially in the earlier years, but once I had a solid university foundation, then the journey was very enjoyable.
Yeah.
And because now when I was working, I was not studying at the same time.
Yeah.
I was able now to focus on the work aspect, the practical aspect. And that is really what they also assess in your board exam.
Yeah.
Whether you have now assimilated the university knowledge and you are able to use it on the job.
Yeah. Yeah. That okay.
And then I qualified this year, and immediately after that, I then was promoted within the organization as an entry-level professional. Now currently an auditor.
Yeah.
And my job is to audit, or our organization, we audit the public sector.
Okay.
To really hold them accountable for the spending from the public purse. So I audit Bozama to check if they are not really using the public resources.
Well, we all know where that one is going, right?
Yeah, but I think for me, I can just say that I'm seeing an impact where we are.
Yeah,
because the Auditor General is basically the highest auditor on the land.
Yes,
and we audit all the public sector, whether you are a department, you are a municipality, a public entity.
Yeah,
as long as you are funded from the public fund, we audit you. And what I've seen is that, although it may have seemed in the past years that we were only auditing and reporting, and we would give the president the report, and he would see what would happen with that report. Now, recently, the AG actually has been given some powers now that we can actually use to actually become more stricter and actually recover whatever that could have been lost in the process. So I am actually seeing that we are making an impact, though I cannot say how big or small, but we are.
No, certainly.
So this is the space I'm currently.
Certainly. The only thing that I was saying was, well, we know how these politicians behave and with our money, right? So that's, we've got about 5 minutes, and I want to ask these questions. I'll start with you, Mrs. Muguti. If in 30 seconds or so you were to define your relationship with money, how is it? Is it a toxic relationship, a good relationship? How would you define your relationship with money?
I think my relationship with money is good.
Okay.
I'm one person that avoids debt by all costs.
Yeah.
I think the only part where I really to improve on as far as finance is concerned is spoiling myself a little more. I'm getting the culture of that.
Okay.
I think I'm too focused on getting goals, getting things done.
Yes.
That I sometimes forget that it's not bad to get yourself ice cream.
Yes.
You work hard. So I think my relationship with money, I would say, is fairly good.
Yeah, it's not bad to spoil yourself a little bit. So there, I agree. And you, Mr., what's your relationship with money?
My relationship with money is slightly different, especially because I have the financial knowledge.
Yes.
So I sort of have my own framework of money. For instance, my wife does not like debt at all.
Yes.
Whereas for me, I will sit down and say, is it a good debt or not? I mean, if I have access to debt financing and I can use it for better, or to better myself, or to advance, I would take such financial decisions. I'm a risk taker. But thanks to my wife, some of the decisions, I hold them back a bit.
Yeah.
But I think my relationship with money is such that, you know, as a young person, having been deprived of a lot of things, you also sometimes fall into the trap of wanting to recover.
To try to catch up or try to put at a certain position.
But I also have that knowledge or financial knowledge. I think that helps me and helps me a lot. Just in a nutshell. Also, immediately when I started working, I was knowledgeable about vehicles of saving money. I got my employer provided us with a financial advisor. I got a financial advisor. I started saving, which actually made it easier for me when I then met my wife. I already had all the cows. And then So even though I might have been reckless here and there, but I had those savings and those financial background on me helped me that regardless of what I do, I know what is important.
That's interesting. I do think that it seems like it's two people that met that have the same attitude around money. And maybe that does make things a little bit easier, you know. Unlike people like me who just blow things out of proportion, you know. So it's good to get someone who understands. And it's always interesting that, you know, it's the guys, and especially ones who are in finance, that actually mess things up, you know. You'd be like, but you're a chartered accountant. How come you're such a regular spender? You're like, but Ved, I can't do it myself. Exactly, you know, they learned about this, but they are the ones who are blowing it like no one's business. And then I think I've had a chat with a previous chartered accountant as well, who was like, you know, people would have thought that as a chartered accountant, I know how to manage money. I had to learn the hard way when I started working, because even though I know about it, I was the one who was blowing money and kind of using it recklessly and all that. So it's interesting to hear that. It sounds like from the both of you, you know, it's two people that have the same attitude and same things around money, and that's amazing. My last question then would be to maybe the both of you, 30 seconds or thereabouts. What advice would you give to your younger self, and what would you do differently if given the chance to start all over again?
I would say to my young self that, you know what, young man, go to school and go to church.
Go to school and go to church.
Yes.
Sure. Okay. That's amazing.
I think what I would say to myself is, so when I finished, when I qualified in 2017, I had a desire to pursue my career further. But looking at the circumstances at home, I chose to go and start working. I think what the only thing I would change was, looking back now, I think I would have stayed in school and allowed myself to also grow up a bit, because I think the workspace requires a certain mindset which I had to grow into very quickly, unprepared in private. So in the private sector, it was just too much of a burden in the system for me. So I think that's the only thing. And also, I would say live a little. Yeah, I think I've always been, and I'm trying to do that now, because God has blessed me with a husband that lives a lot. I think I've always just been school, church, home. I've never been a person that is too outgoing or even thinks of leisure, because I'm like, you know what, girl, you must fetch that degree, get that job, you
secure
know.
So the bag.
I think living a little gives you a balanced life.
That's interesting.
I was going to say, I can, if there's a few seconds, I would just to validate why, for me, going to school and to church was actually the hope that I did not have. Because as I started and I said that I was a parentless boy, as sometimes I if there's someone who's listening and wants to read further on my story, I actually wrote a short article in my LinkedIn.
Okay.
Tamim Manoyani. The article was titled from a parentless boy with no definite aim or purpose to a man with a CASA designation.
Sure.
And that is where I actually outline how I was at some point a parentless boy, but then being adopted by an Adventist family.
Yeah.
They actually gave me hope and they assisted me to get into university.
Sure.
And today I actually have a home. I have people I call my parents, and I actually now am a professional, registered with a professional body, and I have my own family. Whereas if I had just stayed in that village without hope, who knows, or had even given up on school, who knows where I would be now. So I really am very grateful to the Lord for that family that identified me as a young person and so potential and invested in me. And today I am a truly a man with a CASA designation.
Fantastic.
And I am grateful for that.
Fantastic. Well, Mr. and Mrs. Manonyan, really appreciate your time this evening. I think your stories are really amazing. And we are not done, by the way. We are going to have part two because I feel like there's a lot that we still needed to unpack. So when we come your direction again, please do not close the doors on us. But thank you so much for joining us this evening and sharing your story and, you know, sharing your vulnerability as well. We really appreciate it. I do hope that the Lord will continue to bless you and open up more doors for you.
No, thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
A very uplifting experience.
Indeed.
Also, reflecting is always good.
Yes. Good evening. Have a good one, and God bless.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.